Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase. A lot of many local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are still open and ready to serve you during these uncertain times. Help them out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery/pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and so much more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Once again, that is rocknashville.com. Friday evening at 6 o'clock, Chase got dressed up, trimmed his beard, probably took beard. I just said beer, I think. Beard.
There's no beer.
No. Took a shower, probably put on some deodorant, used shampoo and soap and everything. And he got ready for the Hall of Famer, Tom Glavine. A little Facebook Live or one of our game night editions. And I'm going to let you take it from here, Chase.
Yeah, this was – look, I'm not going to lie. I kept it together. I was professional, but it was still fun. I mean, it was – this is somebody that I grew up watching play for the Atlanta Braves and those teams of the 90s, and we hit it all. And, you know, you never really know. I've interviewed Tom Glavine before, but this is a different setting, and he was fantastic. He was laid back. I mean, he asked us before we started, is it cool if I have a glass of wine while we do this? So, I mean, you could tell he was comfortable, and – we got into everything from the 95 World Series, sorry, Darren, and also his thoughts on today, on everything going on and the negotiations between the players and the owners. So a lot of ground to cover. If you know, we've condensed it down to about 20 minutes, but he was on almost an hour. It's at our Facebook page. If you missed it, you can go check it out.
Without further ado, here is some of Tom Glavine on Friday night's game night.
You know, this has obviously been a weird time. We were talking before we came on about how creative you have to be, especially for us that do sports talk radio. We don't have live games to talk about. Things are starting to start back, creep back, but a lot of old games that have been on, and whether it's you guys on Fox Sports showing some of those fantastic games from the 90s with the Braves or MLB Network, you know, I've learned a lot of history, but I'm always curious with athletes. Have you always gone back and watched some of those games or your old games, or is this something that you've kind of done during this time?
I haven't done a lot of it. You know, I do it from time to time, obviously, but, you know, I think up until this go around with Fox showing the 95 World Series, the only time I've ever really seen it was on a kind of a grainy, ugly DVD that I had of it. So, you know, it was kind of fun to see it and see it in, you know, much better quality than I have. But, you know, also kind of go through the whole series because obviously having been a part of it and played in it, you remember certain things. Certainly for me, I remember my games that I pitched and stuff like that. But, there were a few things here and there that I had forgotten about. I certainly, you know, it's funny. I was doing a similar Zoom type thing with Fox and Ryan Klesko. And during the course of that Zoom session, Ryan reminded me of the whole bat flip controversy that we had there in Cleveland when Jim Thome flipped his bat and nearly landed in our dugout. And, you know, how David Justice had kind of challenged everybody that, you know, somebody hits a home run, they better do something. And Ryan was always pretty proficient at the bat flip anyway. Didn't need much more coaxing, so to speak. So kind of had forgotten about that and then forgot about Doggy Dustin, Eddie Murray, and knocking him down and some of the trash talking that had gone on during the course of the series. So you forget some of that stuff. So it was fun to relive that and kind of find to go through that and kind of see how everything – built up and you know how it all you know kind of played out when it was all said and done.
I have a lot of fun on the midday show that I co-host because I'm with a Mets fan and I'm with an Indians fan, and so Darren, the Indians fan, every now and then the 95 World Series comes up and I have to pour a little salt in that wound. But that, you know, I watched that whole series recently on Fox Sports, as you were saying, and enjoyed the intro that you and John Smoltz and Chip Carey, you guys were able to put together. And I was young. I didn't remember it very well. And so it was cool for me as a lifelong fan of not only baseball, but the Braves to relive that. And I know so many people have felt that way. So what's been some of the feedback to go back and like you were just saying, relive those moments that you may have forgotten about?
You know, I think for the most part, like you say, you know, people watch the series and much like me, you know, they forgot some of the details. Obviously, you know, the outcome, but they forget some of the details, but you know, and just in following along on Twitter and stuff like that during the course of the games, it was, you know, it was fun to see people's reactions to big plays. You know, I know obviously Doggy pitched an unbelievable game in game one, just complete domination, like, you know, he had done so many times. You know, and to see him go out there and do that against such a powerful lineup was certainly impressive. And then, you know, my game in game two, it was funny. I remember watching that. You know, I knew it was one of those games where I struggled a little bit in the sense that I didn't have too many easy innings. Seemed like I was kind of in and out of trouble a lot. And then after sitting there and watching that game, like, even I'm watching it and I'm yelling at myself on the TV. I'm like, my God, will you get ahead of somebody? Will you throw strike? But it was just one of those games where I had, you know, again, I had forgotten how much of a struggle it was in that sense, because you see the end result, you know, the numbers were good at the end of the game, but it was a struggle to get there. I remember in that Javi's pickoff of Manny Ramirez at first base and what a huge play that it was. But I had forgotten at what point in the game it had happened. And then when you see fans' reaction on Twitter after that happens and, you know, stuff like that. So then it was fun. You know, it was a ton of fun for us because we did the whole Zoom party on game six, yeah. You know, and kind of going through that game and then leading up to when DJ was coming up and we knew he was going to hit the home run and having some fun with that. So, you know, when you know what's going to happen, it's a little bit more fun, obviously. And you get to, you know, people get to kind of, I guess, foreshadow what's coming and have some fun with it. So it was fun. I mean, look, it's a different perspective for me because I went through a similar situation the week before. So I'm a big Bruins fan. And the Bruins showed their 90 or their 2010 or whatever cup year, 2011 when they won the cup.
Yeah.
And you know, for me as a fan, you know, you watch that series and it's funny, some of the things that, again, that you remember and the emotions that you have. And then, you know, even though you know the outcome, you know, I forgot how much I hated that Vancouver team. I forgot that, you know, during game one that Bergeron got bit in the finger. And that whole thing that went on there. So it's just, you know, it was a very, very similar circumstance, like I said, for me watching that World Series, even though I lived it and played in it, to have that experience of going back and kind of, you know, kind of refreshing some memories and at the same time kind of having, you know, a lot of Braves fans, obviously there were at different stages in their lives. Some of them were real young. Some of them were, you know, high school or college people, kind of reliving that and what it all meant to them. It was a ton of fun.
We've all been watching The Last Dance, and one of the things that has kind of come to my mind is I see some similarities between those Bulls teams and a lot of the core players that were there for the run, and you had some others come in and out, and I see the similarities between them and between you guys. Is that something that has kind of come to your mind as you watch it?
You know, I think the similarity that I see is at the end of the day is the expectation, right? And in baseball, you're not going to get one guy who can dominate the sport the way Michael dominated basketball. You're not going to get one guy that is going to be like that. I guess, and I may not say this properly, but you know, you're not going to have one guy on a baseball team that if, you know, he's there, you're phenomenal. If he's not, you're not.
Right.
To me in basketball, that's probably the one sport, maybe, you know, you'd argue a quarterback in football. But that's the one sport. If you've got that one really dominant guy, he can impact the game in that sport probably more than any other. I think in watching this, it's apparent in The Last Dance of the expectation that Michael had of his teammates. He wanted to win and he expected to win. And he knew in order to win, everybody had to be on the same page with him. And that meant that he was going to piss some people off and he was going to push some guys. But as he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he was, you know, going to drag guys along if he had to. But at the end of the day, it was all about the expectation. The expectation was to win. I think the similarity there is it was the same way in Atlanta. You know, the expectation to win. And I look at some of those younger guys who would come up from time to time, whether it was a Chipper or a Ryan Klesko or a Javi or, you know, Rafael Furcal, or, you know, you look at some of the pitchers, Kevin Millwood, Jason Marquis. It was tough for those guys coming up during that time because we had to win. We were expected to win, which meant, guess what, boys, buckle up. You got a job to do, and you better do it because we expect to win. You know, when I came up to the big leagues, the Braves were terrible. So it wasn't necessarily about winning. It was about developing. And I look at the situation that I had as a young player trying to break into the big leagues. That was much different than, hey, welcome to the big leagues. Now we win every year. You better carry your load. That's a far different set of expectations. So I think that's where the similarity is. The similarity is that both teams had a very high expectation of winning, which meant that everybody on that roster better be on board and better be prepared to do what they needed to do in order to get to that ultimate goal, which was to win. I just think in the case with The Last Dance, Michael was obviously that one guy that drove that bus and made everybody get on it. Whereas in baseball, I think it's a little bit more collective.
We're talking to the 1984 fifth-round pick of the LA Kings, Tom Glavine, here with us. And
fourth-round pick.
Yes. So you you brought that up earlier that you're a Bruins fan, but people may not realize you played hockey and you were an NHL draft pick. Obviously, it worked out. It worked out for you going baseball, but did you ever consider, especially like in 94 with the strike, you know, and that was something that was brought up in The Last Dance, that was one reason why he went back. Did you ever think about jumping back into hockey at that point, or was there ever a time that you thought about playing?
I had one brief moment that not so much that I thought about it, but I knew it was a fallback. My very first summer, I signed professionally after my high school season in 1984, went to rookie ball, and about 3 weeks to a month in, my arm started hurting. And I thought, oh my God, if I've blown out my arm, well, at least I can go back to college and play hockey. And I got over it. And then that was it. I never looked back. Now there were plenty of times where, you know, if I went home to Boston, to see my parents and I went to a Bruins game, and I was there, yes, I 100% wondered what would have happened. I missed playing the whole nine yards. But, you know, as time went on, obviously that missing the game went away. I don't know to this day if the wondering what would have happened will ever completely go away. Of course I would wonder. I mean, I think we all can look at our lives and see, you know, some sort of crossroad, so to speak, or some sort of important decision that we made. That we wonder, man, if I had made that decision differently, how would things have turned out, right? Yeah. And I'm no different. I look at it and I think, okay, I really have a really hard time believing that my hockey career would have gone any better than baseball went. But at the same time, I wonder, what would have happened? You know, and you know, my joke is always, and I say this completely facetiously, you know, that clearly I would have been a Hall of Famer in hockey because I was drafted ahead of Luke Robitaille and Brett Hull, both of who are in the Hall of Fame. So clearly a Hall of Famer in hockey. I say that facetiously. I know it would have been a tough go. I was 6 feet tall. I was 175 pounds coming out of high school, and that was a dime a dozen in hockey. So I had nothing in hockey that set me apart, so to speak. Being a left-handed pitcher kind of set me apart a little bit in baseball. So that was the big reason why I chose baseball. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I still love hockey. I still play it a little bit here and there. And I still, like I said, I wonder what would have happened, but I have zero regret about the decision I made because I know it was the right one.
Tom Glavine, Hall of Famer here with us. And I do want to get your thoughts real quick on everything going on, obviously an unprecedented time and something you can't really prepare for. A lot of decisions have to be made. And we know this week that baseball and the Players Association, they're having meetings and, you know, there are finances involved. And you have some players like Blake Snell that very outspoken about, not playing. And one thing that Tim Kirchen brought up when he was on with us was he referenced 94 and your role in 94, and that they had back then players like Tom Glavin that were able to guide those waters. And even if, you know, labor disputes happened again or got close to that, there were players like yourself that had gone through it. And now you don't necessarily have that, even though this is a different situation. So how do you view what's going on right now, and what's some advice that you might have?
You know, I think that without knowing or being in privy to conversations, right, I'll just speak in general terms. I think players have every right to be concerned about their health, no question about it. And I think it's the kind of thing that, like I've said to people, you know, if for me today, I'm in Atlanta. Georgia has opened up businesses on a limited scale. I can choose to go to a restaurant. I can choose to go to a grocery store. I can choose to expose myself however I want. You get into a situation where you're back playing baseball and people are telling you you're going to travel and you have to get on a plane and you have to do all that stuff, you've lost control. And right. And that's not an easy thing to give up, especially when a lot of these guys have wives and kids at home, because the last thing you want to do is get it and bring it home, right? So that's where you're perfectly 100% right to ask questions. You should ask questions. You have to, I guess, put some trust in the people that are smarter than all of us to figure out what the best course of action is and how can we do this as safely as possible. There's nothing that anybody can do to tell you 100% if we do this, nobody's going to get sick. But if we can get it to a point where it's really, really close, then I think you got to think about it. Now, you get guys who say, hey, I'm not playing. Okay. That's your right to say that. Are you really prepared to go through with that? Are you saying I'm not going to play, but you expect to get paid? Or are you saying I'm not going to play knowing you're not going to get paid? I'm not saying that's going to happen one way or the other, but I can promise you it's a part of conversations, right? So when I can equate it to the 94-95 situation in the sense that I would tell players, if you're going to speak, be informed about what you're speaking about and be careful about what you're saying, because I can promise you, and I know this is a little bit different, but I can promise you there were a number of times during that 94-95 situation where a player would go on TV and give an interview and say something that was not true that was going on, that was his opinion or his understanding, knowing he hadn't been in any meetings, he didn't understand everything that was going on. And the owners would look at that and go, okay, if we just wait a little bit longer, we got these guys. So you got to be careful about what you're saying, because you don't know what you say is going to prolong the situation by even a day. You know, could be a day, could be 2 weeks, who knows? So just be careful and make sure you have your facts straight and make sure you really understand what you're saying. Now, I will say this from a fan standpoint, from a former player standpoint. Again, players have every right to ask all these questions about health, 100%. When it comes to the economics of it, I think you got to have an open mind. You know, I'm not sure that as a player I would expect to make a full salary given we're only going to have a half a year. I mean, this is a unique situation. And as much as put my players union hat on and say, you know, the heck with the owners and dig your heels in, the 94 situation was much different than this situation. This is a situation none of us have ever experienced, none of us would have ever seen, and we're all trying to navigate it. Now, having said that, I understand the Players Association's concerns about agreeing to a 50-50 revenue split, because at the end of the day, that was the essence of the strike in 94-95. That's a salary cap. Right. Now, whether you want to call it that or not, fine. Whether you want to say, hey, these are extenuating circumstances, therefore we need to think differently, fine. All I'm saying is we've seen it. We've seen it in our own lives. We see it in politics every day. Once you agree to something and you give something up, so to speak, it's really hard to take it back. So I can understand the Players Association's concerns in saying, well, if we agree to this 50-50 split in revenue, does that open the door for more discussions about a salary cap? I 100% agree with that. I get it. I'm not saying that's the case. And again, I'm not privy to the conversations, but I think there has to be some give and take on both sides. And, you know, I don't know how to navigate through it. Again, I'm not sure that if I was a player today and we weren't going to play a full season, maybe a half a season, that I could sit here and honestly make an argument to you that, well, that's too bad, owners. You still need to pay me my full salary. I don't know that I could make that argument. But in fairness, I think that it certainly is a starting point. I think there's no question that both sides are going to have to sit down and figure out a way to navigate through the economics of the game. But I can tell you this, having been through it in 1994 and 1995, in this environment, people want to get back to normal. And normal is watching sports. And much like in you know, I equated it to a little bit in a previous interview to the when we came back from 9/11. We were the first team to go into New York and play. And the emotion that was in Shea Stadium when we went back that first game was unbelievable. And knowing that these people in New York were getting a break from what they were dealing with for a couple of hours, and in the long term, being able to say, hey, we're getting back to normal now because, you know, baseball's back. That's all part of it. So people want their normalcy back. And part of their normalcy is watching their sports, which includes baseball, obviously, this time of year. At the end of the day, in 94, 95, we took a beating as players. You know, the baseball took a beating from fans who swore they were never going to come back. And I think a fairly good percentage of them never did. Yeah. If you allow that situation to happen again here, to where all the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted, but we couldn't come to an economic agreement, baseball is going to take a beating. And I just think it's something that neither side should allow to happen. If there's any lessons to be learned from the 94-95 strike, it's that. Because I know, again, having been a part of it, when we went through it again, I don't know what it was, 5 or 6 years later on the heels of 9/11, that was the cloud that was hanging over us, to all of us, during those negotiations, was we can't do this again. We can't do this to baseball. We can't do this to baseball coming off the heels of 9/11. We can't do this to the country. And it had a big impact on those negotiations. And I think this situation will have a big impact on what ultimately is decided as well. But like I said, I can understand the trepidation on the player side.
That was a game night this past Friday night, Facebook Live. Chase McCabe interviewing Hall of Famer Tom Glavine, if I can spit it out as it's spitting rain here in Smyrna. We'll come back and discuss some things you heard and more stuff on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. You can enter our uniform drawing contest for a chance to win a jersey from the Nashville Predators, Nashville SC, Sounds, Vanderbilt football, MTSU basketball. You can download a jersey template from thegamenashville.com, or you can draw your own and submit it for your chance to win. Game listeners will then vote on the top three uniforms from each category, hockey, soccer, football, basketball, and baseball, with the winner getting a jersey from that sport. Enter today at thegamenashville.com. Just saw while we were playing Tom Glavine that Middle Tennessee's athletics director Chris Massaro and their football coach Rick Stockstill will hold a public Zoom webinar this Wednesday at noon our time. It's called Moving Forward with Football. So that is pretty interesting. A public Zoom webinar this Wednesday at noon our time. That's Chris Massaro and Rick Stockstill. Thought I would pass that along. Your thoughts on the interview? Well done, Chase, with Tom Glavine on Friday.
Thank you very much.
Very well done, Chase. I thought you caught him and you allowed him to open up on a lot of subjects that I was all very interested in. I loved hearing him talk. I would love – this is the thing about The Last Dance that is compelling. When you have interesting subjects, you feel like you could keep going, right? Richard Deitch has an article today from the director talking about the things that he left on the cutting room floor that he thought – alone would have been worth the time to put a whole documentary together about. For example, Michael Jordan's rise as a high schooler from being cut from the varsity in the 10th grade to becoming the top high school player in the country in a two-year span. Tom Glavine, being a brilliant hockey player and baseball player, is worthy of more investigation. I would love to hear more stories of him telling, you know, how he did decide. And I thought it was really interesting saying because he was a left-handed pitcher, he felt like that gave him a better chance. That separated him from the regular elite athletes, if you could put it that way. I thought that was really interesting. And then I thought it was obviously fantastic perspective on, you know, the situations that the players' union is in. They've got a lot of power for Major League Baseball, but you wield it at the right time. And this may not be the time to try to wield maximum power, right? You know, let's just try to get through this season. And then I think the most important thing for the union might be when things start to stabilize, then maybe fight for and make sure the system is proper going forward. But this year, I think there needs to be some very careful handling of the circumstances they're under.
Good job weaving our interview with Tim Kirchen, which was really good last week, into the interview, where he did indeed bring up Tom Glavine back in 1994 and 95. So good job by you on that. That's why, and it was pretty interesting, he definitely seemed like he seemed to back up what we have been saying about baseball, how they better be really, really careful how they handle this in their attempt to start their season and put together some type of a season, that this better not be about, you know, salaries. It better be about, you know, just be careful how they publicly handle this, because there's just a lot of people, as we know, that there's over 30 million people unemployed in this country that just don't want to hear millionaires fighting with billionaires at this time. They usually don't ever want to hear that, but especially in a pandemic, that you just don't want to hear that. So baseball better tread lightly. It's why it infuriated me, the Blake Snell comments, why I spent the last 2 days of last week's show just basically trying to tell you how much I just was at some point disgusted with Blake Snell's comments. He's allowed to bring up his safety and his safety concerns, and I am all for that, no doubt. But don't tell people that you're only going to come back if you get paid your full salary if you play half of a season. Oh, so safety's not a concern if you make $7 million, which would be your full salary. Safety is a concern if you only make $3.5 million, and then you break it down about you have to pay your agent and your taxes and blah, 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 blah. People don't want to hear that, man. But it's okay if you get your full pay? Then it's, you're okay with living with that? And, yeah, I just was taken back by some of Blake Snell's comments. So baseball will have to be very careful. And my guess is Blake Snell told privately that his comments didn't go over very well. Maybe he needs to think about going a different direction.
Well, you could hear it in Tom Glavine's answer, right? You could hear it in Tom Glavine's answer. You can tell he was talking about Blake Snell, because he was doing it in reference to some Blake Snells of the 1990s who would open their mouth and talk about things. And it's really the tone you use, right? Some of the comments that Blake Snell make, when you see them in print, you know, if you just took them line by line, there's some points that are legit points, but it's the tone and
we play the audio
that he said. Yeah, that it kind of makes him sound a lot worse than maybe the actual substance of what he's saying. But like the owners, like you could say, well, the owners, you're taking losses. Why do the players have to suffer as much as you? It's just something that it has to be put behind the scenes. The players overall have done really well in Major League Baseball. We talk about fifth starters making pretty good money these days, you know, so the whole salary cap thing doesn't resonate with people anymore. Every other sport has a salary cap. Baseball sort of has a salary cap now. If you notice, more teams are not going over the threshold to pay the luxury tax like they did before. I think you just got to put some of that stuff aside for the good of the game right now. I think that was the theme I heard from Tom Glavine.
Yeah, I mean, and there were other things that he touched on that I had to cut out of that that you can hear in the full interview on the Facebook page. But, you know, Willie, I brought up one of your favorite subjects about playing multiple sports and, you know, how beneficial that was to him and that his kids do that. And he gave a very well thought. I mean, you could tell with these answers, I mean, they were very well thought out and he articulated them. And he said that it helped his career tremendously playing hockey, playing baseball and doing both of those. And that he definitely recommends that kids do that. So that was what I appreciated. Just, you could tell that it wasn't just a Friday night interview for him. I mean, he put a lot of thought into how he answered questions. And so I felt smarter once I was done with it, because I learned something, you know. It just, you learned a lot from listening to him talk. But what you guys were saying about this whole labor dispute, I mean, he's somebody they should listen to, because he understands and he knows how hard it was for baseball to come out of that strike in 94 and then to have it almost happen again a few years later. And to be able to navigate that he's somebody that they should definitely pay attention to.
Well, remember how bad he was booed after the strike of 94, because he was one of the lead player reps, right? He was out front. He was talking to the national media. It wasn't just representing the Braves, right?
He talked about how they got crushed
at the top. The players got crushed. Oh, he got crushed. And then so he had to factor that in after 9/11, as he pointed out. I had not thought about that in a long time, as the sensitivity of post 9/11 and the fact that the players had done extremely well. He certainly learned, I think, some things. You know, he gained some wisdom between 1994 and 2002. So I thought that was really well put, and that's something that people probably hadn't thought of in a long time. So he had to go through a whole lot of stuff. And it probably made him smarter. And now, like you said, Chase, he's a guy that a lot of people might want to pick his brain behind the scenes, because he's been through a lot of labor talks. And I think he would have a great perspective for Tony Clark and some of the other leaders among the players right now.
Really good stuff. We thought that you would enjoy that. I was looking, you know, we talked to Adam Alexander earlier, and Fox has been showing their NASCAR coverage. The Darlington 400 was yesterday. Kevin Harvick won, and we knew that this would be a good thing. That's the first thing I brought up back when we first started talking about this. Like, NASCAR needs to figure out how to get back out on the track. They have been going the wrong way for a long time. They need to get new eyeballs on their product, and they have been losing basically half of their audience in the last decade or so. Well, some of the data is starting to come in, and as you can imagine, NASCAR benefited from yesterday, and there were six markets. I saw a tweet that said six markets where NASCAR viewership grew by at least 100% compared to the last time a race was shown in that market. Los Angeles was up 150%, San Francisco up 130%, Chicago up 127%, Philadelphia up 112%, Milwaukee and Providence up 100%. So, as expected, just like the UFC, just like The Last Dance, if you give anybody anything at this point where we are, you're probably going to benefit from it. And NASCAR came out a big winner yesterday.
Yes. And they released a 3.7 rating. That's the national rating, 6.3 million viewers. That is the most watched non-Daytona 500 race since March 2017 by NASCAR.
There you go.
Wow.
And so that's, for comparison, this is Adam Stern put this out, that 7.026 million people tuned in for this year's postponed Daytona 500 on a Monday afternoon, and 6.323 million watched yesterday. That's awesome.
Can I throw one more thing that I enjoyed about the Glavine thing before we turn the page?
Sure, and he did say that, you know, when I brought up that he also played for the Mets, he said that was just a vacation. It was a little vacation to go to New York.
Hey, he had his moments for the Mets. He won his 300th game as a member of the Mets. He got the Mets to within one game of the World Series. He helped out with that team. I got no problems with Tom as a Met. I enjoyed watching him, but he's always a Brave for sure. But the point that he made that I thought was great, Chase, I thought it was a great thing to talk about, you know, perspective of athletes maybe watching the classic games for the first time. You know, there's tons of athletes, and they're just moving on to the next thing, right? They've never taken the time to go back and watch their old highlights, other than maybe a clip here or a clip here that's thrown in front of them. But to watch a whole game, that's something probably a huge majority have never done. I loved hearing him say, you know, game two, which I was at. I was at game two at Atlanta Stadium, games one and two of that 95 series, where he said he was looking at the TV going, man, come on, get ahead of somebody. Like he's battling through. I thought that was great, right? Just, he's getting mad at himself 20-something years later watching a clip from that game. That was awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool too. That stood out to me that, like, here's a guy that's still got those competitive juices flowing and it's just being brought to light. I mean, it's similar to what we talked about with Jordan, you know, as he relives some of the moments going through The Last Dance.
And you forget a lot of the details. Right. You forget a lot of the big details, like the Javi Lopez snap throw to first, which was a huge play in that game. You know, you forget about some of the little things, when it is, what happened right before, what happened right after. That's why I love going back and watching the old games. Darren probably hopes or was wishing that Tom would struggle a little bit more than he did in that game.
Yeah. Yep. Like I said, I never felt like the Indians were going to win that series. I felt the other two they were. Those two were way worse than 95. I never felt like they were truly going to beat the Braves. Even though the games were close and tight and it was a fun series, I just never felt like it was theirs to lose. But by the way, you never get rid of those competitive. Guys wired like that, or athletes wired like that, they just never – that never gets out of their system. I haven't played competitive sports in a long, long time, and I never played at any high level. But I had those juices. I wanted to beat you. But I still do that. It's just different ways now. Now it's in fantasy or, you know, other things. Cards, cornhole. Chase has seen some of it over the years. I mean, you don't ever lose that. And those, you know, those type of athletes are wired even completely a whole different level. Tom Glavine, I'm not surprised to hear that because Jordan, Glavine, and there's a whole long, long, long list of athletes that are wired a certain way, that never goes away. They just have to channel it a different way.
Remember that day, I will never forget this, when we were at the arena, and I don't even remember how we got on the subject of watching a game that, you know, broke your heart. You know, have you gone back and watched? You know, I think with you, we brought up the Christian Laettner game, and Derek, in the middle of the show, starts watching the playoff game against Baltimore.
That was one of the funniest days on the show, I think.
And is legitimately getting pissed off. I mean, like, it's coming back out, and we're sitting there going, what did we just do?
I take the blame for that.
Well, I was going to say, didn't we all, like, tell him it would be therapeutic? And
yes.
It was going to be a good thing for him?
Yeah, yes. I was like, enough time's gone by. It'll be interesting.
It backfired.
It was bad advice.
Because
it didn't change anything. He did.
He's
it was not
the desk.
Therapeutic.
I mean, he's throwing stuff. I remember that. I mean, because he's like sitting there watching it, and you can just see it in his face, just the anger coming back.
That's a prime example. Derek Mason was absolutely wired that way. You'll never get that out of his system ever. He just has to channel it a different way. But that's a prime example. Still, watching it today, everything we said to him was wrong because it didn't change anything for him. Time didn't heal any wounds. It wasn't therapeutic. There was nothing good other than his blood pressure going about 500 over 400 after watching that again. We'll come back and wrap up Monday's show next. Little Van Halen bringing us back here on this rainy Monday, or at least it's raining here on the south side of town, raining east or west?
It's been raining here, yep.
Okay. On and off, yeah.
It's kind of gray and rainy here. So we have an answer to what we threw out there earlier when I said it looks like about 22 of the 32 teams are eligible to reopen starting tomorrow in the NFL. And I think it was Willie, you said, well, I wonder if the Titans are one of those 10 teams. I have the answer.
Ooh, do you?
Indeed, the Titans are one of those teams that will not be back in the building this week. Looks like they will hold off at least another week. I saw the Titans, and I saw the Broncos. I'm trying to remember if I saw any other teams of the 10. But, yeah, so indeed, the Titans are one that will not be getting back to the facility this week. So we do
wonder. Don't you think that's a key –
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, going back to the
At some point, you want. I mean, there's no doubt that it's a big factor. People want their own doctors to do an evaluation of him. He had postseason surgery. He's had injury issues that in the past. The microfracture is always one where long term you're worried about degenerative conditions there. So that makes perfect sense. And so I think the sooner you can actually get him in there, if he's interested, right, and if he wants to show that he's worth more money, then I think that's a key date. Whenever that first day is, you could bring him in.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think the minute they can get back to the facility, if indeed that happens next week, the Titans are able to, I would fully expect them to have Clowney in as soon as possible, I guess. I don't know. Maybe there's not a rush, but there is a rush to sign him, all right? If you truly are very interested in him, then, you know, you don't want somebody else to jump in there and beat you to the punch. So there may not be a time crunch as in actually getting in and getting acclimated and being around your teammates and present, you know, being involved in OTAs. Like, all that is kind of tossed out the window. But there is a race in case other teams jump in there. You don't want to lose out if you truly are interested in him. So I would think they would have him in as soon as possible the minute they open up those doors.
I would hope so.
I mean, I think that that's definitely, and you kind of worry if other teams open up and they get him in there, could they steal him? But, you know, if he's truly fine waiting, then he'll wait until all facilities are open and try and get the best offer possible. But it's something that I thought about when you were saying that, with what teams are reopening, what teams aren't, and with the Titans not reopening yet, I immediately thought, what does this mean for Clowney?
I was reading a piece on Bill Barnwell on ESPN.com, and he said the Texans and the Texans and the Patriots were the off-season losers in the NFL.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, the Titans 25th.
Losers
of their off-season. I was reading that earlier.
Are Texans and the Patriots at the top? Is that how it works?
Yeah, they bat like 30. The 32nd team was the Texans. So he's
saying
so
he thinks their offseason was – so he's got them near the bottom too, as in it was not a good offseason for them.
Yeah, and he goes into more detail about why he thinks that and that, you know, it's – they had to do the Tannehill deal, but, you know, do they – could it have made sense for them to let him test the market and get Dalton or somebody else? And he gives a little more detail on it and what – that they need to now let Derrick Henry play on the franchise tag and essentially do it again before giving him a long-term deal. So it's a good read. I was reading it earlier.
Well, I mean, we've asked that question. Do we believe that the Titans have gotten better in the offseason? And it's hard to really make that case. It really is, unless you have the belief that certain guys will only get better. Like, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, Rashawn Evans, those guys will get even better. Certain players like that, younger, Jonnu Smith will have a big breakout season and maybe catch 60, 65 balls. But it's hard to make the case, is Derrick Henry going to be better than last year, leading the NFL in rushing? Is Ryan Tannehill going to be better than last year? And you lost Jack Conklin, you lost Jarrell Casey, you lost Logan Ryan. That is some key guys. And you lost your defensive coordinator. No idea whether, you know, Mike Vrabel can handle head coaching duties and a defensive coordinator role. We haven't seen that. So it is hard to make the case today. Even you may have liked the draft, you may have liked the moves to this point in free agency and what they've done, but it's still, to me, it's hard to make the case that they're a better team. You guys disagree or agree?
I agree with you.
I think you could make the case, but Clowney would make an easier case to make.
Clowney changes the narrative. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that would change things.
Because you can still say that pass rush, I mean, yeah, they got Vic Beasley, but okay, what is Vic Beasley? 2016.
Well, you hope he's a better version of Cameron Wake.
You hope, but you don't know. That's the problem.
He's younger. Your hope. I mean, Wake didn't really make a huge impact. He might have had a game or two that he did okay, but he was largely a non-factor.
Yeah,
right. So I think the biggest thing is who's replacing Casey, and if the answer is Simmons, then okay, you already had Simmons. Simmons should be way, way better, and it's really exciting to think about what he can be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love one more guy, one more weapon up front there. I think that would make a big difference.
That will do it for our show today on this Monday. Hope everybody has a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. We'll see you then.